Craig Hughes. Not a good word to be said about banks here, but not quite hate speech, which brings us on to our next topic, the hate speech legislation currently before the Seanad. What prompted it? Where is it at? And what's proposed?
Well, it's a modernisation of the 1989 Act. It protects a kind of wider protection of specialised categories. So they include race, colour, nationality, religion, ethnic origin, descent, gender, sex characteristics, sexual orientation, or disability. And breaches of the legislation can result in a fine or up to 5 years in prison. There are some controversial aspects to the legislation. And in particular, there was a very good debate this morning on Claire Byrne about this, but it related to search warrants. So if a judge or a district court was satisfied by information provided on an oath of a member that there was reasonable grounds of suspecting that evidence or something relating to that, relating to the offence, could be found within a property, that he could give a search warrant to that.
That's the change from the old Incitement to Hatred Act from 1989, which is that if something happens within the confines of a private home or even a temporary structure, that's private business and the state has no role in it.
Yeah, and the Act kind of deals with, your intent to circulate that information, or if you were to put it up on, say, a message board, for example, that would be considered an offence. So, I guess some of the issues that will come around this, and there's a test in the legislation around motivation, to see if someone had was willfully engaging in hate speech. And there are a number of pieces in the legislation that would excuse that, whether someone gathered material for legitimate political grounds that could be considered offensive elsewhere. So I think the motivation test will be quite crucial to this. I think there will be some interesting debates in both houses on it.
You mentioned a debate that was on with our colleagues on the Today with Claire Byrne programme earlier. Here's Liam Herrick from the Irish Council of Civil Liberties, who was expressing some concern about the Act as it's currently formulated, or the bill as it's currently formulated.
What the bill is trying to capture is if somebody, for example, intends to incite hatred by publishing pamphlets and distributing them, or preparing material that they intend to disseminate on the internet with the intention it will rile up hatred against a minority group, for example, that if they're already in the process of the conspiracy to do these things, that if the guards become aware of it, that they might want to seize the material before that incitement happens. Now, that's understandable. But if you create a very broad power for the guards to go into people's homes, and the search warrant powers here are very broad, and actually to seize or prosecute people for material where it's not at all clear that they were going to disseminate it publicly, that they might have just had it for their own personal use, that is the danger. And as the proposal currently is drafted, it's not tight enough.
Okay.
Annie Hoey, the hate speech bill as it's currently construed, is it badly in need of some work to address some of those concerns that Liam Herrick flagged and that Craig flagged, or is it okay as it is?
I mean, I think whenever I think of, and let me assure you, our inboxes are full of thoughts on this, ranging from the polite to the impolite, that we don't, under our current system, people are not being prosecuted for doing great harm to other people, and they're not people who look like me, or they're not to other people for whom are being either verbally attacked or physically attacked because of their appearance, because of where they came from. I just think that gets a little lost in the conversation.
Isn't that different? There's public order legislation to deal with people being shouted at on the street. There's legislation under assault to deal with people who are being physically attacked. But for something like hatred in and of itself is not a crime. To criminalise the incitement of something that is not a crime is perhaps charting new legal territory.
I think, it's defining the difference between, and I don't want to use the term, a regular assault versus an assault incited because of how someone looks. And I think it's very easy, again, I'm saying I'm not someone who's ever going to experience this, and I don't think any of us here are. And whenever I think of this, I try and think about the people who will be or have been on the receiving end of this. And I don't know what it's like to be attacked because of how I look, but I know that those people who are, I know I'm losing myself a little bit, but I feel like all of the things that we discuss about this is we're losing sight of that there are some people who for whom have had an extraordinarily difficult experience, and they are not being prosecuted in Ireland currently there's very low conviction rates, very low prosecution rates. And I think this legislation, ideally, we would need this legislation because we would never have people being attacked or verbally abused because of who they are, where they come from or what they look like. But unfortunately, those people, that currently is happening, and we don't have strong enough legislation to deal with that.
All right, Malcolm Byrne, the low number of people prosecuted has been advanced as an argument for acting on this. But the low number of people prosecution also perhaps shows the high premium the country puts on freedom of speech, no matter how offensive we find the exercise of that.
So, yes, freedom of speech is incredibly important in a democracy to allow all of our citizens, all of those who are resident here to express their point of view is something that should be rightly not just protected, but celebrated. I think it is noteworthy that Reporters Without Borders indicated that this was, you know, the country with the second freest media in the world. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, there are issues like defamation laws and so on here that still need to be reformed. It's something that is important. But like every right, there are also other rights, and they include an individual's right to their own reputation, to their own personal safety. And our challenge is about able to balance.
The reputational one is already covered under defamation legislation. The right to personal safety is covered by public order and other criminal legislation. So when does... speech become a crime?
So this is where, if you like, we look at where we see aggravation or where there is incitement to hatred. So what this legislation is doing is it's dealing with a very different world to what we had in 1989 when the last piece of legislation came up. Particularly, we have the internet. We have, you know, what's going on online in terms of the abuse. There have been, and I checked, in 2021, the Garda Síochána recorded 448 hate crimes and hate-related non-crime incidents. So these would include...
How many hate-related non-crime incidents?
So 448 in total, between hate crimes and hate-related non-crime incidents.
So hate crimes are crimes in which a prejudicial element was present.
So for instance, where there is an attack that is against an individual on a particular ground. So it's a homophobic attack, or where it's an attack because, you know, somebody is of a particular or perceived to be of a particular ethnic background. And how this will generally be determined is it's normally, and where you have stuff that's caught on CCTV, where the person who is being attacked, they tend to be subjected to homophobic or racial slurs or abuse. So the evidence is there that not alone is this attack, you know, a physical attack, but it is being motivated because of the perception of who the person is. So it is viewed by the Gardaí and recognised in law as an aggravated offence.
But would you accept somebody verbally insulting somebody in person in a manner that is threatening is different from somebody writing something on social media, no matter how offensive that is?
Yes, it is different. But again, and we dealt with this, the odd thing was we actually dealt with a lot of these issues in the Online Safety and Media Regulation Act, which was enacted last year, but for 2 years before the Oireachtas Media Committee, we debated these issues. And it's very easy where something is clearly a criminal offence. So, you know, somebody who encourages terrorist activity, that's a criminal offence. The difficulty is where, you know, you're
but that's incitement of violence. That's the difference.
Yeah. The difficulty, again, is where it's subjective. And I'll give you the point of a piece of legislation, Coco's Law, for instance, which celebrated in many ways the life of Nicole Fox, but who was sadly, as a result of constant online bullying and effectively hate speech directed at her, she took her own life. And this law was to address some of those circumstances. So what we're trying to do is to get the balance right between ensuring and having open and fair debates, which we absolutely have to have, right, but at the same time ensuring that it is done where people feel safe within that space.
Michael Collins, what do you think of this bill?
I actually don't agree with this hate speech bill. I think it's an attack on democracy. It's an attack on our freedom. I think there's laws here already. We should have been...
You don't think people should be protected from emotional distress, do you?
They certainly need to be protected, and there's a lot of people being targeted and finger-pointed for totally, which is totally unacceptable. But the bottom line is, what we're doing here is we're leaving a situation wide open where maybe one guard might think somebody is in a public place talking and bringing up issues like hate speech, and another guard might feel that is not an issue a person should be prosecuted. So one person might be arrested where the other person might have said the same thing an hour earlier.
But isn't that true? There are people who walk down a main street with 10 pints on board. To one guard that's intoxicated in a public place, to another, that's just a fella on his way home, let him on. Guard the discretion is not something new.
That's true, but unfortunately, this situation, it could lead to quite a lot of people being arrested. That, you know, some people put things down on paper or whatever, and they, you know, the next day they wake up, I've got them myself, I've got messages, the next day I get an apology from the person that sent the message, even though I never responded to the message in the first place. And, you know, you could look at the first message you got and you could say, well, you know, I could go further here, which we don't as politicians.
Would you see it as different from the point of view of a minority who feels already isolated within a country and maybe at suffering from targeted online campaigns against them, that maybe the people who engage in this when it reaches the level of campaigning against a minority, that there's something different at play there?
I just think that we're taking this one step too far, and I think the freedom of speech that people, you know, are entitled to a degree, and yeah, as long as they're respectful to other people, that is being taken away from people bit by bit. And I just don't agree with this legislation. I think there's no substance. I don't think we got enough time to debate it in the Dáil. We certainly should get enough time to debate it in the Dáil. And if the people think it's serious enough, maybe it should be a referendum before the people and let the people make their mind up.
A referendum on?
On the free hate speech legislation or not? Should we have a law against such thing as hate speech?
Can I give you a very clear and a very specific example? And I won't use the language that was used, but it was a highly publicised case. So Lee Chin, the Wexford hurler, is an outstanding sportsman. He's a role model for so many people. At a recent charity match between Wexford and Tipperary, there were racial slurs hurled against Lee Chin. Now, his teammates came, you know, they were a solid team. They came to his defence. The state didn't take action in this regard. The GAA took action on the basis of the hate speech directed by that fan at that game. And that particular fan has received a 48-week ban from attending a GAA on the basis of...
Is that arguably more effective, that somebody is isolated and receives the sanction of their peers rather than the state intervening?
It may well be, but I mean, that was obviously in the context of where it happened, you know, at a GAA game. And I'm using it as an example. But what would have happened had, for instance, Lee Chin being used? I'm using it as an example, but Lee Chin has spoken about, you know, the racial abuse he's received before. But if Lee Chin had been walking down the streets of Wexford or been walking down the streets in West Cork and some of the abuse that had been hurled at him, whether that is acceptable in society, and how often should he and others have to suffer that before the state intervenes?
Isn't that a question for the people who are on the street with Lee Chin, whether they should tolerate as bystanders that kind of abuse?
But I accept it. But should bystanders have to step in if somebody is hurling that kind of abuse?
Isn't that what society is about? That people have the common decency to stand up for people who are under attack?
I agree, and I would hope that most people would. But unfortunately, there are some individuals in society who don't. And I get, and this is whether it's about controversial debates, and I get on debates like immigration, we should have an informed, right, evidence-based debate, but it's the language that's being used. And I do want to hear Michael's view on whether...
I just want to come to Craig, because it does affect journalists, and Craig...
Yeah, well the journalism side, I think, would go back to the defamation side of things, which dramatically curtails freedom of speech for the press due to the litigation side of it. But I'll park that for a second, and just on the point you were raising about, you know, is it not up to society to step in cases like this? Well, someone I know, Shane Gillen, who was on the Late Late Show not so long ago for his sketches, he intervened when he saw a woman being racially abused on the street and ended up being seriously assaulted. So perhaps, you know, giving the state powers in some instances isn't the worst thing, so that Gardaí could intervene and not put another member of the public at risk in a situation like that.
Annie Hoey, we saw, you know, when people seeking international protection arrived in Ireland, you know, pretty heated demonstrations outside hotel accommodation where people were being accommodated. And after a while, that seemed to have dissipated, and we saw situations like in Carrigrohane and other countries, other towns around the country, where people were welcomed, and we had the counterexample of people coming there. Is it sometimes a good idea to allow society to show its welcome to people rather than the state intervening robustly? Because if the state intervenes robustly, you have arrests, days in court, and people who seek the oxygen of publicity having that amplified through their day in court.
Yeah, well, one of my own communities, I'm based up in Ballymun, you know, we had a huge amount of those protests, and there was an enormous amount of community work that went into that. And that was the right response. I want to agree with that, that there were communities went and spoke to each other. There were people literally going out on the streets, meeting people, talking about it. There was a huge community response, community groups, gardens, all of that. And those numbers massively dwindled, and you know, people in their communities dealt with the misinformation. But that was a managed community response, and that is a right managed community response. I don't see that people are just going to suddenly be rounded up for speaking and saying things based on that. You know, this has quite a high right. bar, there's quite a high standard. There's a number of burdens of proof that the guards, whoever it is, it's up to them to prove various things, whether that's intent to disseminate and stuff like that. Like, it's quite a high bar. Do you know what I mean? I'm struggling to see this idea that people won't be able to think.
If a hate crime is defined as any criminal offence which is perceived by the victim or any other person to have been motivated by prejudice, is that not quite wide?
I think, yeah, it's quite wide, but I'm struggling to imagine this sudden totalitarian regime right. that people are. I really truly am struggling. The people I'm thinking of, and you know, Malcolm's given some examples, and I can give some really serious examples of particularly friends I have, black friends I have, who have experienced both violence and very serious things because of the colour of their skin, and they should have every right to retribution and through the hands of the law. On that, and I will absolutely stand over that.
Michael Collins. This hate bill, to me, it is very wide. It is very wide, and I can't understand what Malcolm said here earlier on about the gentleman that was abuse was hurled at. Surely the state should have. Surely there's a law there that if you are, regardless of the colour of your skin, walk the streets tomorrow morning, regardless of this bill coming in, and somebody abuses you left, right, and centre for no reason at all. Surely the law of the land stands as it stands right now. Right,
so you agree with that bit in principle. So where do you draw the line?
When should people, of your colour of your skin, okay, you shouldn't be abused.
So how much racism is okay not to cross that line in your view?
Well, I just think that this, we could move into an area here of people trying to, you know, express themselves, write something on a paper, and might actually intend to carry it any further than that, maybe dump it the next day. A lot of, you know, the Gardaí are entitled to maybe get a search warrant and search your premises. That's an area that's, you're going down a very dangerous road here, I think, and here personally. I think there's laws here that maybe that needed to be tightened up that weren't being tightened up already, especially as you spoke, Malcolm, with that gentleman in the pitch. The GAA dealt with it. Well done for them, and well done to them, but certainly the law should have been asked to step in here too and do their side.
Michael, you're correct, because I mean, with the law must be exact, because you can't have a vagueness that's there. And I know Jim O'Callaghan and my colleague, you know, raised a number of concerns that the legislation does need to be sufficiently tight. But as Annie said, I mean, there are a number of bars that are required with regard to proof, and part of this is around intention. If somebody in the course of a conversation, if they have a slip, if they say something inadvertently, if their intention is not to be harmful, the question is around the burden of proof. But where you have an example of somebody where, you know, there is very clear evidence that they are engaging in racist or homophobic or misogynistic behavior, and the burden of proof is there, you know, you are innocent until proven guilty. If a case is taken by the DPP to court against somebody, this is about an aggravating factor. So what it is if somebody is assaulted, they will be charged with assault. But the question is if that assault is then motivated by hate, then there is
That's a hate crime. But in terms of hate speech, Michael Collins, why should anybody be offered protection under the law? If somebody has been caused distress through somebody else's speech, deliberately designed to make that person feel isolated or lesser, why should they be offered any protection under the law?
Yeah, but it depends on the type of speech. You know, we could be here for the rest of this week explaining what type of speech ends a person up in a lot of trouble. Nobody should be attacking anybody. Nobody should be putting people down, or that shouldn't be, that shouldn't be acceptable. As far as I'm concerned, the laws are already should be tightened up a little more, but not bring in more, another bill to, I'd say, maybe, you know, just talk about democracy, right, or maybe not allowing us our freedom of speech that we've had already in this country.
Annie Hoey, Malcolm Byrne was talking about his proposal by his colleague Jim O'Callaghan to, you know, tighten up maybe the law. But if things are too tight, do they become products of their time? And once upon a time, there was a list drawn up in the Dáil of, you know, words that are deemed offensive in the Dáil that may now seem archaic. Brat, acting the brat, buffoon, buffoonery, chancer, communist, corner boy, coward, fascist, gurry or gutter snipe, hypocrite, rat, scumbag, scurrilous, and yahoo. I mean,
I can hear this being on playback at the weekends.
At least one of them, communist, was issued in the, I think was hurled in this studio with no particular offence taken last week.
I think, yeah, you can refer to communism, but you can't call someone a communist, but you can call yourself a communist. I remember looking through the list of it as to how one can divvy it up.
Would you be preferable that you would have principles-based legislation that would be interpreted later through kind of case law, or would you be interested in tight legislation from the off and amend later if necessary?
I think so people have outlined, as you said, concerns in the Dáil. We're hopeful that when it comes to us in the Shannon, there might be an opportunity that the government will address. I know there was indications that they might tighten up some pieces in the Shannon. We'll obviously look at those really closely. I think the ideal is to get good, decent piece of legislation that is workable, that doesn't tie people up into knots, that people understand who will have to enact this legislation, so it's clear enough for the Gardaí and the DPP to understand. And then we go from there. We can, and as we've seen, particularly during COVID, we can amend legislation in mere minutes if we want to in a house. If something isn't working, we can. If the government, if we need to fix it, we can fix it. But I think it's important that we give it as robust analysis, and that we're given the time of the Shannon that we can do that. And hopefully Malcolm's colleagues will have the time to do that. We haven't got the schedule for it yet. And that the government will tighten up some of the areas that seem to be glaringly obvious that government members themselves have said are missing. And then I think we just have to take it from there and see how it goes.